Hello, I am Tracy Hitchens. My guest today is Jerry van Kooten, co-founder of the DPRP, the Dutch Progressive Rock Page. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and a very good night to you wherever you are across the globe. I'm transmitting from the Gold Coast in Queensland, Australia. You've tuned into Tracy's Prog World. Well, I love those hot days with the cool breeze and the temperatures drop, cool enough late night log fire, even though it's a YouTube fire, but more so particularly if you're up a mountain, the temperature's dropped, it's cooler, it drops about 6%. Well, I know I've been banging on about this a bit lately because, you know, it's coming into the winter out here, but I was up a mountain recently, as you know, and for the weekend that was, and it was a real fire. I had the sheer delight of lighting that log fire and all in our t-shirts, hey-ho, as my big sister would say, as they ran off to the cool air system. I just love those orange ambers, and maybe when we go back up in a few weeks' time, they will ask me to read a story by the fire and stay, not run away, you know. So anyway, while I was up there, I actually made a signature cocktail. Dr. Prog and myself, we had at our wedding a signature cocktail, and it was a lychee cocktail, which went down very well amongst all, very well indeed. And I made the version with gin, but a bit more a kick than vodka one. But afterwards, we made gin and vodka, and it was really a blast. Anyway, so on with the show, guys. I know you're out there waiting, and thank you for joining me again. I have a wonderful guest here from Scandinavia. He's from the most beautiful country of Sweden. Well, it's not from there, but that will reveal itself. And for those of you who know already, well, anyway, I bet the log fires over there are as snug as a bug in a rug. Anyway, with no further ado, I would love to welcome Jerry van Kooten. How are you doing, Jerry?
Hi, Tracy. Good to see you. I'm doing fine. Here from beautiful Sweden in the afternoon here in my time zone.
Wonderful. Yes, indeed. So how are you doing? How's the weather doing out there for you? I love asking that question. I'm into the weather at the moment. So are you warm, cold? Where are you at?
It's Swedish spring. And that means that it's sunny in one day and snow the other day. And that has really happened three times already during spring in a month. But it's a very comfortable 16 degrees now, Celsius that is. And yeah, I love it. Yeah, moving from Holland to Sweden was a good step for us. The climate is one thing we love.
Yeah, really. You're enjoying that. Beautiful. So yep. What do you love about the climate compared to, because you're a Dutch man, as I well know.
Yes.
And what's the difference then for you with the climate in Holland and where you are in Sweden? Because you're about 2 hours from Stockholm, aren't you?
Yes, 2 hours north of Stockholm.
Yeah.
That's not even halfway up Sweden. So you can go further up north. But the difference with Holland is that the last 10, 20 years, the weather became drier and warmer. And it was too warm for us. Well, there were more things to escape Holland for, but that was one of the reasons.
Are you living rurally or are you in a built-up city?
We live in a tiny village of 25 people, about 15 minutes from a village of 2,000 people and 40 minutes from a town of 100,000 people, which is wow. Where my work is.
Yes. And what do you do for work then, Jerry?
I'm a software developer.
DPRP, is that still that is still your passion and love, and you still do another job on top?
Yes. DPRP has always been a hobby.
Yeah, exactly. It's like every progger I know, or almost every progger I know. Yeah, it's exactly that. Yeah. So, and also, I'd like to say congratulations on the 25 years with DPRP.
Yes, thank you. 25 years. Wow.
What a milestone. Yep. I know. Incredible. God, where has it gone by, Jerry? Where has it gone? It's just gone, isn't it? Well, obviously, I've known you from all that while back, and seeing you, you know, around the stomping grounds of the prog rock, you know, across Europe and wherever you sort of bob up somewhere. Yeah, and of course, all your reviews and everything like that. So anyway, just to get into a bit of Jerry's background here, you guys out there. Jerry, now, you got into prog in 1981, about the age of 11, when hearing Canadian band Saga.
Yep.
You soon got introduced to the second wave of prog, mainly British, which still is a big part of your taste in prog. And you say living in Holland was hard getting information on bands in a time when smaller bands could only use cassettes and mailing lists were on paper. So yeah, just tell us just a little bit about that, what your experience back then was.
Well, in hindsight, I can say it was quite hard. At the time, it was also exciting because some people would visit Britain and bring back some records, or some people would just say, oh, I just bought this record, but you never heard of it, so you wouldn't buy it. And that happened with albums by Pendragon, Marillion, IQ, 12th Night. So those were discoveries for us. While at the time we discovered those bands, they had already been playing live for several years in the UK.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So it was all about finding information, I suppose. So you became the co-founder of DPRP.net. Yes. In around 1995, wasn't it?
That's it.
And for any of you new guys out there that aren't aware of this, that stands for DPRP, is short for Dutch Progressive Rock Page. And that was to provide information when that was hard to find, as you were discovering, such as news pages, band home pages, and gig guides. However, a changing world changed DPRP.net as well. So tell us a bit about forming DPRP, how it came about before we move forward with what you discovered. So what drove you? How did you find yourself at the situation of co-finding it?
I met a guy called Martijn Albering. He was working on a fan page for Arena and was trying to include information about other prog bands as well. And he asked me to help. And together we decided to make a more general page on progressive rock bands. And that was Dutch Progressive Rock Page. And we started to collect information and put it in one place.
That's excellent. And so, of course, I remember Martin very well indeed. And we were quite a little family then, but just grew and grew and grew, didn't it?
Yep.
So obviously with all that work, what's interesting about that is, you know, it became a changing world as you were doing the DPRP.net. So I just keep reminding people out there so they go and check it, those that are new. But what started to change? What did you notice?
A few things. At first, many bands didn't have a website of their own, and DPRP provided web space, and most of them were done by members of the DPRP team, but some bands did it themselves, and we provided just the web space. Then it became easier for bands to have their own website, so they moved out, and then it was no longer an issue for us having those band pages on DPRP. And the gig guides became very hard to maintain. And first people asked, oh, can you do gig guides for other countries as well? But there was just too much information coming in to make that happen. And with the news page, it's slightly different. At first, we collected the info ourselves. Then Ben started to send us information. And then we found ourselves being put on mailing lists, and we got a lot of information. And the news page became just something of a, well, repetition of press releases. And I thought, well, we thought, well, it's taking a lot of work, effort, and time to maintain the news page. And people can get that information anywhere now. We decided to shift the focus even more to reviews.
Yes. Right. Yeah, indeed. And so, and can I also ask you, what else, if anything else, obviously the passion of the music, but what else drove you? And what did you get from it for yours? What were you getting? Was it literally the information yourself, or was it more of a duty to help people out there that wasn't getting it? Was it a mixture? Was it just the passion?
It has to be the passion. Otherwise, you couldn't continue. But I think it's a combination of helping the people who want information and helping the bands to get the information out there. We've always had a soft spot for the smaller bands, the bands who didn't make it big yet or needed more attention. We don't mind skipping reviewing an album by Steve Hackett or Dream Theater. You can read them anywhere. Well,
yes,
several team members will review them anyway, but we don't spend any time on it, scheduling itself.
So I suppose it keeps the names of the more, I say, attracting artists, but you really, your lineage is towards those that are needing the help on the way up, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, besides prog, you learnt to love hard rock and the blues.
And
you
yes.
said, I see you smiling there. So yeah, tell me about that.
Well, before 1981, you mentioned it, I was into Deep Purple, Black Sabbath, Kiss. Well, as a 9, 10, 11-year-old, what do you do? And then became prog. But after a while, my taste became a bit heavier. And I found myself going back to mainly bands like Deep Purple. Not so much Kiss, but Deep Purple and Black Sabbath. Who play heavier music, but with that melodic and sometimes progressive touch.
Yes, yeah, that's it, yeah.
And from an older friend, I learned a lot about blues and older blues and Jimi Hendrix, Cream, Mountain, those bands, but also the very old acoustic blues. And somehow that, well, it stuck. And I like listening to it as well.
And going just back to the prog, you've also said that for you, you do say music's from the heart, not the mind. And you say, so there's quite a bit of prog that leaves me cold. That's what you said. And when it gets too technical, so I'd like to ask you, could you give an example of that at all? What prog turns you off? Dare you say, good sir?
yes, I dare say. while I like, for example, Yes's album Tales from Topographic Oceans, I only listen to side one now, and side three I can't even listen to anymore.
Right.
That's a bit more than leaving me cold. It's annoying me a bit. I do like Close to the Edge, but I don't like Fragile. That's a generalization, but
The
first King Crimson I listened to, but the later King Crimson becoming a bit cold, too focused on the technical parts.
Well,
that's just a matter of taste. I know they were wonderful and very progressive, but it doesn't touch me like the others.
So you need it in the heart. You need to really feel it from that emotional point of view. I've toyed myself with some of the technical stuff, and I like it in small doses because I can appreciate it, but I need to be taken on a journey with music, and it needs to actually really pull at my heart. So I think I'm very similarly to you on that in some ways. So that's, okay.
And I understand it's also subjective, because someone else can be really taken on that journey when something is very technical.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's whatever makes you sing, really, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be different for different people. We're all built differently. So not just men and women, but we're just have different ways of getting the joy out of something, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah. Let me think. You've said, I find it funny, and this is getting a bit more personal now, just weaving away slightly from the music, which we'll come back to. But you've said, because I like to chat to people about music, but I like to chat to people about just life things as well. And you said, I find it funny. When I met the woman who I'm now married to and her son, who had a heavier taste than I had, but my taste has shifted and now I'm listening to heavier music than they do.
Yeah.
So can you give any more examples on that? Can go back then what you were all doing and then bring it to the sort of now.
When I met them, I was very into the progressive rock and not so much the heavy stuff, not the prog metal, but really progressive and neo-progressive. And they were listening to White Stripes, the really rock things. Well, that's not even heavy. No, heavier stuff like that as well. I don't know if it's because of them that changed my taste or shifted my taste, but I shifted towards the more heavy stuff, and they discovered other music as well. And that happened just to be a little less heavy. So,
yes,
it's just funny to see. That's, I don't have a theory on that.
Let me just think what I'm going to ask you now. I've got a couple of things going on in my head. Where am I going to go? Am I going to stick to format here? Or am I going to drift off a little bit? Actually, maybe I'll do a little bit of drifting here, because you had a big thing with Twelfth Night, right? So let's have a chat about Twelfth Night.
Gladly.
Just spill the beans as if nobody knows anything. Go from the beginning and give us a little, give us the long story.
Well, when I learned about the music of Twelfth Night, it just became my favorite. That's just a matter of taste. No theory there, no big reason. It's just, it was it for me.
Yeah.
And when not a lot of people knew about them, they didn't really make it big. They had one album on a larger record label, but that didn't make it. And then they quit. So I started a website, started on DPRP, to give more info to people, to spread the message, basically.
Yeah.
And when I found some people online, some of the musicians, we got into contact, and that one in 2007, they reunited for a few gigs, and that was something magical for me. Yeah, I've learned a lot of other bands and a lot of other styles of music, but the music of Twelfth Night has always stayed with me. Yeah, I still listen to that a lot.
So how did you find the guys? Tell me a bit about the guys and your relationship with them.
I think first was Brian DeVoyle, the drummer and manager. And I think that was about the website. Well, that must have been 2005 or even earlier. So I don't remember exactly how that went. Well, we're still in contact. I actually came in contact with Clive when he was living in Australia. No, Clive Mitten, bass player. I came into contact with him by email, of course, when he was living in Australia for a few years. And, well, we're still in contact as well. After the reunion, I was stayed in contact with Andy Sears, the then singer, and Mark Spencer, who joined on bass, keyboards, guitar. Well, I was still in contact, and I like that.
So it's just it was a great period of time for you, and you still have the beloved album, right?
Yes.
Now, you're a person that likes to analyze things, Jerry. So let's look at how you would analyze the prog world and see as it's changed through the years. This is a question that will often come up, and people give their different scenarios of this. So what is it for you? How would you now analyze it? The prog world, the how it's changed.
Musically, I think more and more genres or styles are overlapping. And that can either be that people who listen to progressive music listen to more styles, but also the musicians incorporating progressive elements into their music. An example I can think of is folk music, when you have bands like Mostly Autumn playing a progressive kind of folk, leaning towards Pink Floyd as well. Progressive metal is one. Post-rock, post-metal, there are also progressive styles, sub-styles within that, and more. And I think that's great. Where styles were more defined, I don't like definitions of styles, but it's just a label to explain something. There are more overlaps, I think.
Yes.
I think that's a general evolution.
Yeah, so you get some people that are ferociously for one thing or another, but I like some I like the variation, to be honest with you. I've never been wholly hardcore. I just love the prog area. I really do. And so I get that. And well, you noticed, I know we've kind of touched upon this, but you noticed with DPRP how you focused on news and gig guides first, yeah. Then you saw the changing times, as we discussed a bit earlier. Different kinds of information were required, and from the DPRP site, and you moved almost nothing but reviews. So what year would you say that was around when that started to happen?
Well, we published our first album review in 98, so that was right. 2.5 years, almost 3 years after we started. And the gig guide was stopped about 7-8 years ago. The real reason was rather tragic, because Henry, who was there from 97, 96 maybe, he died. And that was the reason we at least had a discussion about it. And then we decided it's too much work and people get the information everywhere. Because of that, we also decided to talk about the news page. So that must have been around the same time.
Indeed. The digital world has changed, you've been saying. So is it better with the internet when regarding the world in which we live?
I think that's very personal. In a lot of things, you will notice that you pay with your privacy for, oh, look how easy this works and how easy that is to get information, but you pay with your privacy. And from that point of view, since I am the programmer behind the scripts that make up DPRP, I'm really interested in getting the whole site working without any calls to Google, any calls to Facebook, or just have everything on the server, because we can. Yes, it takes a bit more effort from my side, but it can. And will people notice? One or two, but I like it.
Yeah. I suppose because you're a bit of a computer man, aren't you? You write with software and all things like that. So, but I understand what you're saying there. And from the point of view of bands and, making recordings and demos and things like that in the digital world, what's your thoughts on that?
Yes. Well, that part of the world has changed a lot as well, of course. Many bands can produce good sounding demos from within their homes, with their home studios. And it's good that that is possible, because it gives more people a chance to record. It gives us a job to filter out the good from the bad. Or, well, at least tell people about it.
Yes. Yeah, indeed.
Because there's more available.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much available. I mean, it's changed so much that anybody can do anything if you've got the understanding of the digital world, which I haven't. To me, I say it on my show all the time, so they're all used to me out there, the ones that are listening at all, that it was a massive challenge for me, to get to the point where I could sit in front of somebody like yourself, because operating a computer, I'd throw them against the wall first, you know what I mean? I wasn't built that way, Jerry, but I'm glad that I've stuck at it and got the most basics of what can do, because the world we're shifting into, or have shifted into, the world that I'd like to be in it within the music, or with what we're doing right now, and without this, I know people that are so good at what they do in the film industry, but they're not in the digital world, and they're not, they barely have an iPhone, and they've got left behind, but they were so good at what they did, but they didn't convert. It just missed them. I know great cameramen that worked over here in Australia and worked on great movies, but it's just not moved into the digital world. So they're not working so much anymore. It's quite sad in a way, but there's always that crossover point, isn't there?
Yep. It's impossible to know everything. And especially when you're a musician and very focused on playing music, writing music, getting better playing your instrument, you can't do that and be knowledgeable in the digital world. You need other people for that.
Oh, that's it. I mean, I can't even count on my 20 hands or 50 hands the amount of times I have to call a tech in and pay him a few hundred quid for, like, oh, it was that button there, It's not funny. Yes, but it is. You know, it's all part of learning, isn't it? But yeah. It's all part of having the courage to go somewhere where you might not normally go, which I'm glad I've taken the challenge. But there's been a lot of tears, blood, sweat and tears. But and just not, I've barely even touched the iceberg, you know. So there's so much one could do if I knew all the other tricks, but slowly but surely. But just curious to know, Jerry, what have been your discoveries in music in recent times, maybe? What bands or musicians or vocalists or guitarists, whatever, what have you discovered that you love?
One discovery is, and I remember this well because I realized that I was a bit late to the party, was post-rock, post-metal. I discovered that about 7-8 years ago, and it had been going on for 10 years before that. And I thought, why haven't I heard this before? Because it really made me feel good. It was, well, I love it. It's just tastes right.
Yeah.
And then I realized, how is it possible that I just discovered this?
Yeah.
The emotional, overwhelming outbursts.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what bands can you suggest?
Probably well-known bands for prog listeners might be Maybe She Will from the UK, or Mogwai from Scotland, Long Distance Calling from Germany. But if you take things a little heavier, then you get the Spanish band Tundra, which I love. And if you go from that post-rock, post-metal to a bit more rocky, psychedelic music, there's another whole world out there.
And oh, yes.
Swedish band Yuri Gagarin is one of my favorites in there. But there are so many bands. And the thing that attracts me to that kind of music is really being overwhelmed by the sound.
Have you made any discoveries of things that you absolutely hate? I know you've said earlier that over technical prog music is something that leaves you cold, but is there any music that you really can't bear?
I still don't like free jazz.
You don't? No. Not
No.
Right. What about jazz rock?
Some of it. When it's, for some reason, the rather technical Mahavishnu Orchestra, the early albums, it's very technical, but the intensity of it all and the sense of melody just, yeah, I do like that. Frank Zappa, I haven't heard an album that I really, really like. Yeah, I can listen to it, but it doesn't hit me as much as several other bands. And if it's really prog, not so long ago I reviewed the latest Transatlantic album. I hated it. I really did.
So speaking about reviews again, I know we've touched it a few times, but tell me about some of the reviews you've actually loved writing because you were so excited by the music. So many, eh?
Yeah, there were several, yes. But there, I think there's a big difference. I've written some articles on albums that were released several years ago that, for example, we reviewed the reissue on CD while I knew the LP. A few examples are American band Netherworld or German band Neuschwanstein. But there are also albums I didn't expect to like because I didn't know the band. I really, really liked them. So like Dutch band Tumblewood.
Love that band.
Tumbletown it is.
Oh, Tumbletown. I thought you said Tumblewood.
Yeah.
It's actually Grumblewood.
That's from New Zealand.
Yes. Oh, you know them. I've just discovered them.
I just discovered them because of Kev. Kev told me about them. Yeah.
Me too. And I've got them coming on, you know.
Grindelwald, yes.
Yeah. Sorry about that. So another slip there, eh? Yeah.
But for me
for
as well.
A good purpose. Sorry, I stopped you in your tracks there. Sorry.
It was a slip for me too. I said the wrong name. I was really surprised by the comeback of Comedy of Errors from Scotland. I saw that coming because I was in contact with them and they told me they were reuniting. But I was really surprised with the music I came up with. Yes, I really like that. And, well, I'd have to go through a list, but there are several others through the years. It happens just a couple of times a year. Fortunately, music stays interesting.
And that is very fortunate, because I've seen stuff of theirs years ago. I'm trying to think if I saw them live in London. I did. Yeah, fantastic. Great. Okay, so, and still on reviews, Jerry, what's the reviews that you've dreaded the most writing?
Sometimes they don't matter. Transatlantic, for example. I have great respect for most of the musicians involved. So it was pity, a bit awkward. No, not awkward. I thought, this is a pity. They can all do so much better than this. So why did this happen? Yeah. Was it just a record company that said, let's do another album and make money? It sounded lazy. But I still respect people like Portnoy and Roy Nastolt when they're doing something else.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think it becomes a bit awkward or hard to write when I was really looking forward to an album and it didn't make the expectations. Can't find a good example of that right now, but
yeah,
I think
yeah.
that's when things get hard. But we have to...
They're part of the job.
Part of the job. We always say a review has to have an objective part and a subjective part. And if you don't like it, that's okay. But please explain why you don't like it. Because from that explanation, someone else might say, okay, if you don't like that, but you're explaining why, maybe it is interesting for me.
It's funny because I had a quick look just to see what reviews you've written about me. And I found one. I did find one. And it must be about 20 odd. How long ago was Science of Coincidence? But I'm pleased to say it was favourable. Well, Science of Coincidence, I think it was. Yeah. So that's what, nearly 30 years ago, 25 years ago, something like that.
Is that 97?
Oh, I can't remember. Was it 97? Yeah. Was it? Oh, cool.
For some reason, my memory, of course, gets older as well. But for some reason, I remember sitting in my home. And I remember where that was. I remember the home, so I know which year it must have been.
Was you in Holland then?
Yes. Yeah. And I was talking to Dave, who you know, Dave Wagstaff.
Dave Wagstaff.
He explained that they found you as a replacement for Damien, who had left again.
Right.
For Landmark.
Yeah. Damien Wilson.
So that must have been 97, because I was living at that home in 97. Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe Science of Coincidence was a bit later, because 97 was when you joined. So it must be 98, 99.
Was it? Yeah. Thank you.
Because of that memory.
Thank you for telling me, because how embarrassing. But no, this is why you guys can do what you do. You can store a lot of information up there, like Kev can. I mean, it's like, wow. So, right, okay, so you were in your room, you were writing that, you're speaking to Dave Wagstaff.
Yeah, he told me we found a replacement for Damien, and it's Tracy.
Yeah. And she wears a dress.
I knew that. We have met before.
Yes, that's right. We had met before. Yeah. I'd seen you around Steve. I always remember you you had a bit of a closeness with Steve G, didn't you?
Steve Lee? Yeah, well, I was always friendly with Steve G as well, but I spent a few times at Steve Lee's place.
He gets the wine out.
He does. And now I have to say the word Muiderschipperbitte.
Oh, Schipperbitte. Oh, yes.
Now you remember.
Yes. Oh, boy. That stuff with all the gold in it. And, didn't it taste sweet, but really...
yes, it was sweet.
Schipperbitte. Yep. That's it, yeah. But it really had those flecks of gold in it. And Steve Lee absolutely loves that. We'd be coming home with our crates of Schipperbitte from Holland after gigs, you know. Yeah, yeah, we like that. Yeah, excellent stuff. So what's your favourite tipple at the moment then?
At the moment? I hardly drink, but when I do, it is an Islay whiskey. I like the PT one Islay.
What's that? I've not heard of that one, because I do like whiskey myself.
That's the area in Scotland.
Oh, okay.
The PT ones I love.
Yeah. What area did you say again? Let me hear you say it.
Islay. Islay. That's probably my pronunciation.
That's probably not. It's probably me that I just don't know that part.
If you know whiskey, you know the word islay.
So I'm going to feel some shame now, because I do. I like whiskey and water. I know people don't like drowning it, but I do like it that way. Sparkling water, dare I say that? So anyway,
Never tried it, but
no, you probably like it neat, like it should come. Yeah, a really great whiskey. You don't need anything with it, but yeah, because I've been up to Scotland doing the whiskey run in the bars up there many years ago. And that's all you get served. You can't have a whiskey back in those days anyway. Anyway, Jerry, you said you moved to Sweden.
Yep.
And still work for DPRP, of course, but now also have a 30-minute slot on a prog rock radio show on a regional radio station.
Yes.
With an online broadcast as well. Can you tell us a bit about that and exactly what you do?
I came into contact, after I moved here, I came into contact with a guy from Britain who has been living here for over 20 years now. He married a Swedish woman, and she worked at the radio station, where he got into contact with the station manager, and he's a big prog fan as well, and he got a show. And that was 90 minutes at first, and after a while, we've been discussing music. He said, would you be interested in having a 30-minute slot in there? Yes, I was. So, that happened. And it's a bit of a kind of a column. So I just think of a topic and talk a little bit and play some music around that topic.
So what could the topics be, for example, that you come up with? The type of thing that you might come
around Christmas, I got before Christmas, I got a question for someone who said, oh, I got a challenge for you. Find progressive rock and Christmas songs.
Yes.
I found some Christmas songs in progressive music. The first show in the new year, early this year, I had a column about, well, it was the new year. So I found something about new beginnings. So I played several bands who had reunited. That's a new beginning. And currently, for the past couple of weeks, I'm visiting a country and do some research on that country and find progressive rock bands and play it. So a whole show is filled with, well, not the whole show, but my column is filled with music from a single country.
Yeah, indeed. And where can people find you on that? Where can people go to find you?
If you are in this region, it's easy. But everywhere else, it's radiosandviken.se.
Right. Okay. So perhaps I'll get you to send me a link.
Yes.
And I can stick it in the thingamajigger, the little write-up. The link's in the description, so to speak, ladies and gentlemen out there.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, and you're also mentioning, I mean, I suppose I could flip this and say to you, what's it like being a Dutchman living in Sweden?
Well, for this Dutchman, the one you're talking to, it's great.
Yeah.
And I can imagine it's not for everyone. Living in the woods, well, but we can, and we like it. We love it.
Yeah.
We all speak English. I'm trying to learn a language, of course, but almost everyone speaks English. So until then, we come by. I work at an international company where English is spoken anyway. And even in that town I just mentioned of 2,000 people, there are, I think, 12 or 13 Dutch families. So it's a bit of popular among Dutch people to move to Sweden.
Right, it is.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay. So what's that relationship then? Where did that come from? Is there some background there?
Well,
or was it?
There is a historical relationship between Holland and Sweden, but that has nothing to do with us moving here.
Right.
During a vacation, we realized how much we love being out here. This climate, this area, the nature, and the people. We just feel at home. And everyone has to find their own home, of course, and for everyone that is somewhere else. And
yeah,
well, you must recognize this.
Yes, absolutely. Because, yeah, I've made that big move too. And it's like you also said, you made a big move, you know, during the time you had plenty of going with you for work, but you obviously can, in this day and age, you can take your work with you, which is of course what I did. You know, it's like you said to me, you know, I had the choice to kind of leave Landmark on a physical level. That was the biggest social distance I've ever had in my life, 10,000 miles, you know. So from, you know, that was in little old England or London and over here to Australia. And I sort of believed in my fairy caked head that we could carry on because of the internet, but actually, you know, live gigging was a little bit difficult, and kind of being there. We were very much be together band, and you know, so yeah, it's. But if, like you've said it's the best thing you've done, isn't it? It was a really great decision that you've made. Yep. And I still say that, even though I desperately do miss the obvious things, getting up with a live band, because my life shifted slightly here. I'm getting back into the music and have been, but it's shifted so differently that I've had to reinvent my way of being, because I'm not around that same band or those that familiarity anymore. So I've reinvented the wheel for myself, and I've started writing on my own. Therefore, I had to learn an instrument. And so everything changes, doesn't it? And it takes time to find your groove and all. And then I just found myself doing this. This just came along, and I thought, hey, that sounds like a good idea. So I sort of spent 3 months crying, trying to do it. Well, that's the tech side, Jerry, you know. And oh boy. But you know, there you go. We all do these things, but it is still the best thing I've ever done. Like I say, I love the weather here too. It's too hot for me, really, but it means I can swim a lot, and I love swimming. I love the sea. I love that we get dolphins coming in. So yeah, so we've got all these things that are added. And I've got someone who really supports me with the music and supports me with whatever I want to do. And likewise, and we also do health things together. We take degrees together and things like that for skin arthritis. So I'm very happy in that way. So I get that that's kind of where you're at with your lot, you know. Yeah. So
I hear what you're saying. It will never be that everything is better, but the balance, overall balance, is better than it was. And yeah, some things I have to get adjusted to. Yeah.
I think what it comes down to, sometimes it's time to move or shift. Let me say shift. And you make these big, incredible shifts or moves, if you like. And so something is going to be missing, but that's something you've got to let go of and reinvent the wheel. Reinvent yourself a bit. In that case, it was for me. And I've realized I can do all those things I want to do. It's just going to be from a different perspective.
Exactly.
And I'm going to learn more things, you know. So it doesn't matter how long it takes, as long as I've got joy on the journey.
Yeah.
And a few tears, you know.
Comes with a job.
Yeah. It does, doesn't it? Indeed. Yeah. So, okay. And this was a really interesting one for me, something that you said. You said, I love making recordings of a gig I attend.
Yes.
I share but never sell. And I see it, I see it as a way of spreading the music across the world. So interesting, you say to me, it's interesting to see how Tracy, you're talking about me, as a part of the bands that you, Jerry, recorded. And so I'm just fascinated by that. And tell me a bit about that, about what you were doing recording us all back then.
Yes, I did. Maybe you can compare it to some people take photographs and looking back at the photographs. I'm more focused on the audio part and love to hear the gig again. Or hear a gig I wasn't at, but someone else recorded. And it's like a photograph, it's kind of a document. It's an historical document for me. And I love to archive that, to make sure it doesn't disappear, and to make sure other people have it, because if someone loses it, someone else has it. And that might all sound like lame excuses for bootleggers, but I really like to stress, I've never, ever got any money for it.
We know that. We already know that anyway, Jerry. It was a very interesting thing that you were discussing here actually with me, because when that first started out, I thought, oh my God, they've got recordings of us. And I did horrible bum notes on that night. And that's got, you know, I sang badly. Or, you know, so at first, when that first started happening, a lot of people were going to think, oh my God, that was a bad gig that night. And that's being sent out there. Oh shit, you know, we're buggered now.
Yeah, well,
and it was a funny thing of the time, but I think what actually it did do, it got everybody to raise their game.
Oh, yeah. That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that.
We weren't in control anymore. No. We lost control, you see. Yeah, and I'm speaking for a lot of people. So sometimes there's really good recordings out there. You're on great form, and that's what you're supposed to do every night. But occasionally you can get a really crappy sound, can't you, as you know?
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. It's just life moving forward and evolving. So it's not right or wrong. It just is. It is. It's what we do. And basically what you were doing is getting us out there. It was like a calling card to get other people to know us. And it did work, because we did get other people to know us through it. I've been sent things. I'm thinking, well, when was that? You know, and that comes from somebody else who's put that onto me. Oh, I found this. So it did work.
Yep.
It really did. So did you record it on a phone, or did you have an actual tape recorder?
In the early 90s, I used a cassette recorder, a portable cassette recorder. Yeah. Then I used a mini disc for a while, until I learned about audio compression, and that mini disc compresses the audio. And then I bought a machine that records in wave, uncompressed and high bitrate.
Uh-huh.
And I'm still using that, and it's excellent. And
I'm also
using that now to convert old cassettes to digital. So I just play the cassette, record it onto that machine, and then I have it in digital. I have a couple of tapes with you on it. So when those are digitized, I will send them to you. 1990s,
oh,
don't worry.
Oh my God. Which band was I in? What was I in?
Landmark.
Do you remember?
Yeah, Landmark.
Oh, it was a Landmark, was it? Yeah.
But I also recently got a tape of you and Clive Nolan.
Really?
Didn't I email you about that?
Probably. It could have got lost in my conglomerate of emails. I don't recall it. Was it email, or was it by phone? I'll have to go and check.
I don't remember, but I'll find it again.
Okay. Is it in recent time? Yes, please. Can you forward it again,
yes,
please,
of course.
Just in case?
There were some Shadowland tracks.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Oh, that sounds like the Thin Ice Orchestra, possibly, if it's Shadowland and I'm on it.
It was just you and Clive playing some Shadowland songs. I was at one of the Thin Ice Orchestra gigs, and I used to have a tape of that, but that got lost during one of my moving house.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Maybe someone else has it.
I used to love doing that, because there was such a mixture of us there.
Yeah, there was a great show.
Did you ever go to the one that I think one of the ones I think in my own mind's eye that was the best was in Rotterdam?
Yes, I was there.
There were so many of us. And that was that shipping hangar that they converted into a stage and a massive place. And that was great fun. I still hold a memory. I don't know why, I just remember it well.
Yeah, there was something. There was this other band, For Absent Friends.
That's right, yeah. Yep. Oh, gosh.
And they had this song. I don't remember the title, but they did it in their set. Then the Thin Ice Orchestra came. And then afterwards, you all did that song again. So the Thin Ice Orchestra plus For Absent Friends. And you had so much fun doing that one song.
Yeah, that's right. And we went on and on, didn't we?
Yeah, it was long
version.
Didn't
we go on and on and on? We were just having such a good time.
Yep.
Well, that's a great memory, Jerry. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a delight listening to your story. It's been years and years since I've seen you. Like they say, long time, no smoke signals. I know you're out there, but we all go on into our world and do what we do. And collectively, eventually we get back together again through something like this, you know, which is amazing, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it really
is. The other side of the world we're speaking live.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So is there any message you'd like to give out there, fans of your page, or, you know, to say where people can get hold of it? Actually, it's dprp.net anyway, isn't it? That's it, really. dprp.net.
That's it, yes. I can say I am currently working on a new layout, And the new layout will not have the long name Dutch Progressive Rock page in it. We decided to go for dbrp.net exclusively, and that's the domain name. That was what people call us anyway. So
I would like to hope that you will come back for another chat again. And I think we're going to bring Kevin on board and you two can natter away. And I'll just sit back, put my feet up.
Yes.
I'll put my feet up, pour a glass of Chardonnay and let you go for it, you know. Yeah.
It's evening at your place, right?
Yeah, something like that. Just a bit of a party. Yeah, but okay. Well, thank you so much again, Jerry, for coming here. And to you guys out there listening in, I hope you got some great information there. All names given and bands and whatever. You could just start typing into your Google and find out what they are and, you know, love the music, because that's what we're here for, to keep it going. And that's what's important. And this is Jerry saying goodbye to you all out there.
Tracy, thank you very much. This was fun. Thanks for having me.
That was fun. Thank you, Jerry. And you guys out there, don't forget, be safe. And if you're still listening to this and driving, please be careful. If you're at home with your feet up, like I always say, just enjoy until the very last words. And those are coming up right now, I can assure you. So just like I say before, you're very much appreciated for spending time here, coming on board, collecting the information. Please don't forget to email me for anything. I should put the links in the description and some of Jerry's stuff there if you need any others. But I think it's quite easy, dprp.net. And thanks once again. So take care of one another, love one another, and it's over and out from Tracy's Prog World.